and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco. Earlier this month, U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions pressured Albuquerque and three other cities to allow the feds access to the county jail as part of an effort to try and capture more undocumented immigrants. Immigrants' rights advocates say this threat has intensified the reluctance of that people feel when weighing whether to reach out to police for protection or help. But this isn't just an issue for immigrant communities, people experiencing homelessness, family members of folks with mental illness, people of color, refugees. Many hesitate because a police interaction gone wrong could mean violence, getting caught up in the criminal justice system, or even death. That mistrust, that doubt about calling for help, can leave conflicts to escalate, resulting in more dangerous situations for victims of crimes and for police officers who respond when they're called eventually down the line. Have you reached out for police help when you needed it? Or why didn't you call police for help? Does mistrust of law enforcement impact public safety? Call now, 277-5866, or email callinshow@kunm.org. Anne Daubui is the Social Services Director from the New Mexico Asian Family Center in Albuquerque. And you work a lot with people who are victims of crime or domestic violence. Do the people you work with feel like they can pick up the phone and call police for help?
No, it's not that easy for our community members to call in and just ask for help from the police. They don't have that, they have that language barrier, and so they're not able just to pick up the phone and just call that easily.
And you've heard stories from people about tough interactions with officers. What goes wrong typically?
So when they do call the police, they're not able to communicate with the police. And when the police does come and they're not able to communicate because of, like what I said, like the language barrier, there's no one there to help them to communicate and to tell the police officer what's going on and what had happened to them. And a lot of time they use either just people that are around or even the perpetrator who had hurt them to interpret for them. And so they don't really have any trust in calling the police to get help for them.
And the center serves people from a lot of different countries, right, who speak many different languages and who are seeking health care and other services. But does the national immigration rhetoric affect the folks that you work with, too?
Yes, definitely. So with all this immigration stuff that's going on, the Asian community, they are very afraid. They're, afraid that they're going to be sent back home because, a lot of the crime victims, their perpetrator who has the power over them has always told them that, they would send them back to Vietnam or to China or wherever that they came from. And so they're just very scared of what's going on. And they always are told by their perpetrator that, they are illegal here, even though they have status or but then they are told otherwise. And so they're just very scared about all this immigration stuff that's going on in the community.
What about cultural misunderstandings about like what police do here in the U.S. and what rights people do and don't have when they're interacting with police?
So they don't really know what the police does here in the U.S. Back in their home country, the police are different. The police officer there are corrupt, and if you have money, then you can pay people to help you, and the more power you have, they help you more. And so here in the U.S., our clients and the community member, they just feel that the police are the same, and there's no education about police and what they do, and so they really don't know that the police can come and help them. And with just hearing from other people and their bad experiences with the police, just by calling and not getting the help that they thought that they would get, just makes it really hard for them to trust the police here.
And there's this stereotype, this myth that Asian Americans are the model minority and don't run into problems. How does that factor into reaching out to law enforcement for help or not reaching out or interactions with police just generally?
The myth of that model minority is just really harmful to the community, even though people think that this is something that's great because, you know, people think that Asian people are, you know, really smart, they don't do anything wrong. But, you know, people in the community, they do need the help and they do struggle. And so I feel that, you know, just having that model minority myth is just harmful for the community because they do need the help as well.
And so what do you think when you're thinking about, you know, what kind of work do you do to help bridge that gap for folks, to let folks know that maybe there is an option to reach out for protection?
So at our agency, we work with a lot of our community to educate our community about, you know, how to get help and to educate them on their rights and just, you know, teaching them that, you know, it's okay to call the police and, you know, get the help. And, you know, we're their advocate and we're there to help them and educate them and refer them to any kind of help that they need to other agencies and just really educating them. Because right now, really educating them is the most important thing to do and the most helpful for them so that they know what they can do and how to get help.
All right. Adrienne Barboa is the field director for Strong Families New Mexico, an organization working towards rights and resources for families here. Thanks for being with us today, Adrienne.
Thank you so much.
Last year, Strong Families canvassed the city for 4 weeks, asking about people's experiences with police and perceptions of police. Are there any stories that really stood out to you?
Yes, there's several. But one of my favorite story, well, several favorite stories, but, you know, we did a lot of camp. We made sure we were going into communities, low-income communities, communities of color, communities that are, you know, said to be crime-ridden. And one of the most amazing things, I think, in this process of doing this work with APD and thinking about reform for our city is that, you know, overwhelmingly we did these issue identification, did surveys, talked to people about their perceptions and experiences with police, that even folks who had negative experiences still really felt like they wanted to be a part of, they wanted a professional police force, they wanted to feel like they could call the police. One of the stories from when we were on the doors was this family actually told us that they had been part of, one of their best friends had been, was Mary Hawks, one of the women, one of the young women who had been, you know, shot and died from police. And, you know, they talked about how they had always felt like they could call the police, they'd call the police, and that experience and seeing what had happened with Mary, that then they were totally, had changed their perception, changed the way they felt. They were distraught about it, felt like they were now talking to their family about how they couldn't feel like they could call the police and have and that they could feel safe.
So issues around, especially around people with mental illness in our community and their family members interacting with the Albuquerque Police Department have been big and in the spotlight for years. And there's been efforts to give officers more crisis training. Do you think people know about that? And is it enough to relieve people's fears?
Well, also in this experience, I think what I've learned the most is that I really try in the way I talk about things now to not talk about rank and file police in the same manner that we talk about, you know, the folks who lead up. So police are very much a hierarchical structure. You know, the chief determines how things go. Then, you know, they follow a structure and police take orders. And that's what's supposed to make it a department work, right? But because of, we can offer lots of crisis intervention training. We can offer lots of, the department has been really good. I know Transgender Resource Center even goes in and has done some training for our police department. So there's a clear effort to do training and get folks trained up. But I think the shift and the culture shift that needs to change within the department as a whole, how things come down from the top, really makes a big difference.
You found when you were knocking on doors that people really want to be respectful of police and they want to honor people who are on the force, but do they feel protected?
Yeah, no, we did. So we did these surveys. We collected over 500 just in last year. We have a total over the last 2 years of 1,500 surveys. And of those surveys, folks said overall they wanted to feel safe, but, you know, over 50% of the folks said they did not feel safe calling the police. And that was just so interesting to see how many people, you know, said that they wanted to be able to, they honored the police, they didn't like this way that we were talking bad about, or that if any, we weren't, but that they didn't like the us versus them thing. And, but yet they still marked over 50% said they did not feel that they felt safe calling the police. Or the question was actually, do you feel protected by the police? And over 50% of our respondents said no.
So would you call the police if you needed to, Adrienne? And what do you talk to your kids when you're talking to your kids? What do you tell them about it?
Thank you so much for that question. I think I like to really start. I got into this work because my own experience with police when I was really young. You know, I was the young person cruising Central, and I'd be in the car with my friends full of big hair. And, you know, we get pulled over and the cops would pretty much let us go or give us some kind of warning. But I'd be in the same car full of my cousins that I grew up really close to, all young men of color. And when we'd get pulled over for the same thing, it was totally different. The way they treat us, the way, you know, sit us on the curb in the middle of Central, like just take off our shoes, like just a whole different experience. And I noticed really young that there was a difference in like how genders are treated, especially my cousins who, you know, grew up in Westgate. But my biggest experience was with my own son when he was only 12 years old. We were in my office and he was outside with a bunch of other young women, and some cops for some reason had thought there was something going on, and they came and they literally isolated my son, threw him on the floor. My daughter came in screaming. I'm right there thinking I'm his mom. This is obviously a mistake. I run up thinking I'm going to be able to resolve whatever's going on. They're pulling him. They have him really rough in front of me. There's three cops around him, throwing him into the car. You know, I'm running and immediately this officer comes and I'm like thinking, okay, I'm his mom. And I have two other adult women with me. I'm thinking we're going to be able to solve this situation. And no, we were immediately shut down, not given time to talk. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was treated like it was a very violent crisis situation. And there was literally about 12 young women that were under the age of 18 and my son who was 12. And so it was very obvious to me, and I would think to anybody at the situation, that there wasn't a huge crisis, yet it was treated like that. And mm-hmm. we were treated that way. I can say, without going into so much detail, but that evening changed our lives forever. It changed the way my son, that night, I think before that, I'm a single mom. I think before that, he thought I could move mountains to get to him. And after that night and that experience and seeing how all of us were just, there was no mutual respect. There's no opportunity for a conversation or find our way out. It didn't feel safe. And after that night, my son, his perception towards me, his own feelings and attitudes as a young man, definitely after that, I mean, he would call me. Almost, you know, he used to ride the bus home from school. He went to Wilson Middle School, and he'd ride the city bus home. And he'd call me and be like, "Mom, I was at the bus stop, and this officer drove by, and I took off running." And I'm like, "You don't have to run." You know, he was so scared at that point. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I know, I could go on stories forever, but you know, at that time when that happened, I was so distraught, and I was on this like Latino Education Task Force thing, and I sent out this email to the whole listserv, and I talked about the experience with my son, and I was like, this is what's happening. This is why young men's education is failing. And from that one email that I was very emotional about, I got like 70 emails from men saying, oh, yeah, this happened to me when I was 13. Oh, yeah. And they were trying to console me in a lot of ways, but they almost like it was like accepted that, oh, yeah, it's just sort of almost like a rite of passage for young men. And that just, to me, that just can't be the way we operate anymore. We can't have our young men, specifically young men of color, feeling like they're not equally protected under the law as everybody else.
And that's what we're talking about today. Calling the police isn't an easy call for everyone. Not everyone reaches out to law enforcement when they're in danger or when they're victims of a crime. This is an ongoing issue here and all over the country, especially in communities of color who have to weigh the risk given police killings all around the U.S. Do you teach your kids to call the police when there's a problem? Do you strategize with them about it? What do you do to keep your community safe and solve conflicts without law enforcement? Call now 277-5866. You can also post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio. We're going to go now to Antoinette Cedillo-Lopez, who's called in this morning. Good morning, Antoinette.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. You are the former executive director of Enlace Comunitario, which works on interventions and prevention of domestic violence in central New Mexico. We've got increased threats this year by the federal government cracking down on immigration, and local politicians are debating this issue, too. What does that mean for the folks that Enlace works with?
It's really disappointing to see the leadership of this country scaring the community and putting terror into the community. We at Enlace Comunitario, right after this president was, I always say selected because he was selected by the Electoral College, but right after he was sworn in, we had 10 appointments with clients and only three showed up that week. Mm-hmm. And when we called to see, you know, what was going on, they were saying, no me quiero meter en problemas, which is like they just didn't want to get involved, even though they weren't safe in their homes. And that was very, very disturbing because the police, we had been working through the mayor's task force on domestic violence with under Elena Giacchini's leadership. We had been learning to train police, you know, training police officers. There was also all kinds of agreements with the police department about immigrants and not asking for immigrant status. And yet our clients were afraid, not because of experiences, but because of rhetoric. And so it really undid a lot of work that we had been doing over the last several years. So it's really disappointing to see that lack of leadership, I think, is what I would call it, in the national media and even the local media. We were very disappointed, for example, with Wayne Johnson's proposal to go back on the status of immigrant-friendly for the county, because we felt that it was just a political ploy to get anti-immigrants to vote for him for mayor. And was really doing a lot of damage to safety in the community. So I agree with you. I agree totally that the leadership really needs to make victims feel safe about going to the police and not use it for political gain.
And what does it mean for families and for individuals and for households when they can't reach out to police, you know, when there's whether there's violence in the home or violence in the community?
Well, it just perpetuates more violence and makes people become victims with no remedy, with no access to justice. It's really, it's horrific. And it definitely creates a class of people who are not protected. And therefore, they're subject to being, you know, to being exploited more because they don't call the police. And so they can, sexual assault, exploitation in other areas, in employment, all kinds of exploitation when you have a whole class of people who don't feel safe calling the police. And that is what I don't think, or maybe they do, but our leadership is causing this, and it is not safe for anybody in the community to have a class of people who won't call the police or won't go to court. We've got another issue with ICE showing up in the courthouse. And what's very bad about that is our victims are not going to the courthouse to get restraining orders. Witnesses are not going to the courthouse to testify in cases, whether it involves domestic violence or anything. Even criminal indigent defendants aren't going to the courthouse because it might be a traffic ticket, right? And they could pay a fine, but they're afraid that the consequence might be deportation, which would leave their children, their families. So they don't take care of their parking tickets because of this fear. And that is not good for our community. It just escalates the problem.
All right. Well, thank you for speaking with us, Antoinette Cedillo-Lopez. We're talking about why people don't call law enforcement for help when they need it. We're going to talk to a law enforcement officer in just a little bit. We have a lot of calls coming in, so hang with us. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and I'm your host, Barisa DeMarco. We're going to take a quick break.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Conductor Herbert Blomstedt is 90 years old and has 90 conducting gigs on his calendar this year. The New York Times asked him how he kept such a busy schedule. He said, "I love music. How could you deny being together with your loved one?" Herbert Blomstedt conducting the Los Angeles Philharmonic on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
When children go missing in the United States, often the response is quick and efforts may cross multiple jurisdictions. In our native nations, it's different. Amber Alert systems are not always in place, and law enforcement entities aren't always in sync. On the next Native America Calling, we'll take this discussion on. We hope you'll join us.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco. We've been speaking with advocates in New Mexico about the reluctance in some communities to reach out for help from law enforcement when they're victims of a crime. We've been seeing some Twitter comments this morning from people saying they don't feel comfortable calling police because of police shootings, because they feel harassed or threatened, especially while participating in protests and demonstration. Clifton wrote simply, "Pointless." Today, we also have to consider that just a few days ago, a white supremacist or white nationalist rally in Virginia became violent and police didn't stop it. There's a big article about it over at ProPublica.org that says, quote, "Authorities turned the streets over to groups of militiamen armed with rifles." Are you someone who demonstrates or participates in marches and rallies? Do you feel safe doing it? How do you feel about police presence at a protest? We want to hear from you. Call us now at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. I'm going to take a call here from Danny in Albuquerque. Good morning, Danny.
Good morning, Marissa.
What's your comment for us today, Danny?
Well, I've got a couple of them. I used to call APD anytime I saw a problem, when I heard gunfire, when I saw people fighting. But I've seen over the years that they just escalate every situation. So I stopped calling 911 and 242 cops, period. I don't see that they make the situation any better. As to marches and rallies, I've been involved in organizing most of the anti-police brutality marches in Albuquerque. And it can get scary, even when they're not there. You know that around the corner, there's an army of heavily armed people ready to come down on you if you just step off the sidewalk. And going back to 2001, when we did the first anti-war march, that's literally what people were arrested for, was crossing the street. Talk about escalating a peaceful situation. And when police show up, they show up in a black and white car that looks fierce. They show up in body armor. They show up with all these weapons on them. That doesn't bring about trust. Perhaps we need another force or another group of people who can come when there's a problem, that could de-escalate the problem instead of showing up fully armed, ready to harm people.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your comment this morning, Danny. Captain Andy Taylor oversees the Southwest Area Command for the Bernalillo County Sheriff's Department. She's here with us this morning. First of all, you've been here this hour listening to what everyone has to say. Is there any new information here for you, or did anything really strike you as we've been having this conversation so far?
First of all, good morning, and thank you for letting me be here. Nothing really strikes me as being something that, whoa, that happens. I understand that people's perceptions of law enforcement are rather negative, especially with things that are going around in the country. However, I see it from a different point of view, and I can only speak for the Bernalillo County Sheriff's Department. But we are highly skilled and highly trained to de-escalate and to not see color in the people that we deal with. We go out there every day and do the best job that we can do. We remember the golden rule, treat others as you'd want to be treated. We simply enforce the law. We're not there to judge people. We're not there to condemn them. We enforce the law, and we put our lives on the line every day in order to do that, to remain, calm in our society, and especially where I work.
I see, Adrian, you're nodding. You're in agreement with that. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I just think, I have two cousins that are police officers with Albuquerque Police Department, and I care and love about them, and I know that they put their lives on the line for us all the time. And that's part of the piece, right, is I think sometimes because of what's going on and because of the tensions and conversations, a conversation about race with anyone in any situation is always tensious. But when we talk about race, violence, police, authority, white supremacy, like those make everybody sort of get on their defense. And I just think of how, that's why those surveys saying, like, most people want to support the police. Most people don't want to hear anyone saying negative things about the police, but they also don't feel protected. So I relay, I know in New Mexico, especially in Albuquerque, the police are our loved ones. They are our family. Mm-hmm. And all of our families, my family has convicted felons, people that are, and police officers within our own family. So I really hope we could find a way just to be more united in that, in these conversations.
And one of the big pieces that we're talking about here today is federal immigration law. What's the Sheriff's Department's policy on enforcing federal immigration law, Captain Taylor?
We actually have our standard operating procedure, which is the rule book for us as deputies and anyone on the department. And I'm actually looking at Section 313 right now, and we absolutely do not question immigration status on car stops, on anything where there's not an illegality that's happened. We are not authorized to take identification cards, to take green cards, to take visas, anything like that. We don't do immigration holds. We do nothing like that. We simply enforce the state laws. Now, the immigration laws are federal laws. Now, it's a little different if maybe someone pulls over a truck and you open up the back of a Ryder truck and there are 40 people in the back of that truck that are being a human trafficking incident or something like that. Of course, we're going to call out customs and enforcement for that. But for a simple traffic stop or a domestic violence call or anything like that, we're not interested in immigration status. We're simply interested in, writing the traffic infraction and moving along or arresting the offender for the domestic violence incident. We're not. Our policy states that we are not there to enforce the federal immigration law. That is not what we do.
And you find, though, that people still sometimes hesitate in some of the areas that that the Bernalillo County Sheriff's Department is responsible for providing law enforcement protection for, that people still hesitate to reach out.
Right? Absolutely. Excuse me. Absolutely. Working in the unincorporated areas, especially in the South Valley where I'm the commander, we do have a lot of people who are not naturalized or are here illegally, and they are terrified to call for law enforcement because of, I believe, the political climate right now, that they believe that they're going to be deported. And I can't emphasize enough that that's not what we're there for. That is not what we do. That is not what our rule book, our standard operating procedure, allows us to do. That is the job. And Sheriff Manuel Gonzalez III has said this as well numerous times in meetings I've been with him in, with different community action groups. We're not here to enforce the federal law. That's up to the feds. We're here to enforce the state law. So we do have people who are scared. We do have people who I think that the, like Ann had stated, the language barrier. But we do have this great application called Language Line that actually is, people speak anywhere from Spanish to Swahili to Mandarin to everything. And so we can actually get on the phone and communicate that way. So that communication barrier is really broken down for us, so we're not relying on the perpetrator to tell us a story about a domestic violence incident.
Our call lines are full and we're going to start taking calls, but before we do, I just want to ask, when people don't call for law enforcement help, when the situation maybe still is more manageable, what does that mean for you when you respond? Like, does it create more of a dangerous situation down the line?
Oh, 100%. When people, let's use the example of domestic violence, they're scared or intimidated to call the first time that, you know, a man or a woman is abused. They're either intimidated by the perpetrator or they're scared to call for law enforcement because they think we'll do nothing. Then it escalates. And then there becomes not only safety issues for the victim, because now it's gotten to, maybe it was a slap at first and now it's gotten to, now you're hit over the head with a brick. But that also leads to an officer safety issue for us, because now we are dealing with a violent offender who has gotten away with this numerous times and thinks that they're going to trick us, or they may be violent towards us because now they know this is it. They've called the cops. I'm going to jail. And so they may barricade in the house. They may turn violence towards us. It's an officer safety issue when people don't call us the first time. And any infraction of the law, that is what we were there to do 24/7. We are there to support our community. We are community-based policing with the Sheriff's Department, and we're there to work hand-in-hand with them to solve crime problems.
All right, we're going to take a call from Michael in Albuquerque. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, y'all. I know when I was growing up, I had the supposed talk. We just didn't call it the talk. It was just called, this is what you're supposed to do when you're speeding or you're approached by an officer. It was always, yes, sir, no, ma'am, that whole type of thing. And then it went a little bit further, because where I grew up was in East Texas, so racism was a little bit, I would have to say, harder or more hardcore, actually, because the profiling was just so rampant. So, you know, you definitely had to mind your P's and Q's. But at the same time, you know, that taught us a little bit more respect and how to deal with situations. So, you know, with that being said, I don't think the whole police brutality, as far as these days, I think it's being way overdone. And I think people need to take a step back and talk to their kids, tell them this is the way you talk to people, this is the way you dress, so that way you don't get flagged down for certain situations, whether you've done them or not. You know, that's just the way life is. You know, and then with protesting, I found myself in a couple of protests, and I would have to say, especially when Trump came, I felt a little bit, actually, I felt completely let down by the officers, because they let the Antifa left just kind of wash right through Albuquerque without any, you know, without any protection for the rest of us. It was a very, very scary thing. So, you know, that, and those are the types of things that I've had to deal with. And as far as my kids now, I tell them, you know, don't do those things that you're not supposed to be doing. If you get stopped by an officer, you always say, yes, sir, no, ma'am. Listen to every command that they say. It doesn't even matter if you think it's wrong. It's what they're doing. Let them do their job. If you get detained, you get detained. You probably did something in the first place, and we'll figure it out later. You know, and those are the types of things that I tell my kids now, on top of what I was taught.
Right. Thank you so much for your call this morning, Michael. We're going to go now to Roxanne in Albuquerque. Good morning, Roxanne.
Good morning. I would just like to say that I am a white female who lives here in Albuquerque, and I will tell you right now that I would never call the APD or BCSO for any reason unless I needed a police report to submit to my insurance company. If somebody steals from me and I need to make an insurance claim, is the only reason that I would ever, ever call the police. I have four teenagers, and I've told them, you keep your hands on the wheel, you wait for the officer to come to the car, and do not move your hands. And this is what I've taught my children, and this is a rotten shame that this is what our country has come to. And this previous caller with his Antifa statement about the Trump rally, well, I was there, and I'm here to tell you right now, the police escalated that whole situation down at the convention center that night. And we've got a serious problem with our police in this community. And until we address the bad apples on this police force, and there's plenty of them, nothing is going to change in the city of Albuquerque with or without the DOJ's presence. Thank you for letting me, for taking my call.
Thank you, Roxanne. We're going to go now to Daryl in Albuquerque. Good morning, Daryl.
Hello. I'm glad you're having this conversation. I am a CIT, crisis intervention role player, with law enforcement here in New Mexico. I work with the sheriffs, APD, and I'm sort of hoping to assure people that while what they see on the internet and the news may not be, as promising, law enforcement is working to try to change those outcomes and create a better environment in some of these situations. The role play that I do is about, I portray people in crisis. I'm also a person of color. So my role with law enforcement is to make them understand the difference in the times to use force. I've trained specifically with APD for the use of force training mandated by the Justice Department. So I can see an inside track on what law enforcement locally is attempting to do to change those outcomes.
And you feel like things are headed in a positive direction. Is that right, Daryl?
I do feel that because of the sensationalization of some things and the internet and the prominence of cell phone usage, we get a distortive view of what's happening. I meet plenty of law enforcement people who are trying very hard to change that culture.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that it's a slow process, but I also have a program where I'm trying to create more community engagement with police and law enforcement. I had heard the Stronger Families people talk, and I would be happy to engage with other people, immigrants and other people of different languages who might have a fear of police, and I would role play and work with them to sort of get them to understand how policing works in this country and ways they could have better outcomes in their interactions.
Great. Thank you for calling, Daryl. Now we're going to go to Eddie from the New Mexico Dream Team. Good morning, Eddie.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Doing good. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you. Hi, Adrian.
What's your comment or question for us this morning?
Yeah, so pretty much, being a member of one of the largest organizations that advocates for immigrants, we obviously get to hear a lot from people who have a fear of calling the police, even interactions. I come from Arizona, where Sheriff Arpaio and his team would just randomly stop you and ask you for documentation, right? So this is something that, it's just not an empty fear. It's something that actually has a background. And I think that, when we were at the hearing for the resolution that Wayne Johnson tried to pass last week, it's something that we find astonishing, just how our community's security can be used as political props, right? So, I mean, there's definitely a fear, a real fear of calling the police any small interaction, especially when your livelihood depends on that, right? I think that, the reason why people don't, especially in the immigrant community, they don't want to deal with the police, it's because of that fear of deportation. And I think it would be obviously beneficial if we can create stronger bonds between law enforcement and communities of color, disfranchised communities. I remember when my parents immigrated to the United States in the early 2000s, I used to live in a small county in Alabama where crime was high due to no cooperation with the police. And by high, I mean that immigrant families would not have access to like bank accounts, so most of their financial assets would be stored in a shoebox, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of break-ins would happen, a lot of rapes would happen, right? And the reason why they never wanted to call the police is because, number one, there was no language assistance. Number two, there was always that fear of getting, deported, of getting mistreated. So, I mean, if we can create stronger bonds with law enforcement, that would be just amazing and beneficial to both parties, because obviously it puts our law officers in less risk, and also our communities.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that call this morning, Eddie. We're talking about who feels like they can access police protection today. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and I'm Marisa DeMarco. We're going to take a quick break.
Cars can stand for a whole lot more than just a way to get somewhere. They're our first taste of independence. They carry lots of memories. Even after we can't drive anymore, we may hold on to them as a way of, well, holding on. So when you decide to donate your car to KUNM, we know what a special gift you're giving. We are truly honored that you chose us. To donate your car, call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
It has been 99 years since a total eclipse blanketed the U.S. in darkness from coast to coast.
Look at this. Oh, my God, it's coming. Look at that! Totality!
Monday, it'll finally be here again. I'm Robin Young.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us for the awe, the wonder, and the conversation. It's Total Eclipse special coverage from NPR News.
Special coverage begins Monday at 11, right here on 89.9 KUNM and KUNM.org.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Marisa DeMarco, and we're looking at how some people who've experienced a crime or who feel threatened might not think it's a great idea to reach out to police. This is an issue that especially affects immigrants, refugees, people of color, people experiencing homelessness or mental illness. Are you or someone you know a police officer? How does this lack of trust in law enforcement affect your ability to do your job on the force? What do you think needs to happen to bridge this divide and repair this mistrust? Call us now at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. You can find us on Facebook and post comments there, or tweet us at KUNM News. Adrian, we were talking over the break. You have a flood of texts coming into your phone. What do you want to say?
Well, I just mostly, one, I want to say that I do think the department has a lot of things in place and are trying to do great trainings. But even in like incidences like Ken Ellis, right? That was there was a definite PTSD things going on there. All the training that so he was the veteran that was shot. He was, you know, had a gun. He was pointing at himself at a convenience store, and police came around him. All the things that they were supposed to do in that situation, none of them happened, right? Like, they were not, if somebody's in that situation, what I've learned, they were not supposed to yell at them. They're not supposed to point their guns at them. All these things that they were supposed to do didn't happen. So there's a piece just about getting folks trained up and what that means implementation-wise. There has to be an accountability system that keeps people feeling like that. But sorry, the low-end thing I really want to say is, like, this sentiment that if we just do better, or we just follow the rules, or just yes or no, ma'am, that would be great if it was true. But we know that that's not true. And when we make statements like that, whether the guy that offers this crisis intervention training or the guy that called in, you know, when we make statements like that, it just continues to isolate us in an us versus them. Like, you guys aren't doing right, and that's why the police are doing this. And we can't do that, because it's not serving our police and it's not serving us. We have to look at this reform not as something that's defensive or an attack on police, but that reform is something we could all and we should all be putting into. So we have the police force that both our officers and our community deserves.
All right. And I want to say, too, that we invited the Albuquerque Police Department, which is the subject of a lot of these comments, to be on the show today, and they declined. They did offer an additional interview, which I'm shooting for later today. But all police forces are not the same police force, right? And they all have different training. They all have different procedures, different ways that they interact with the public. I want to take just a quick call from Andres in Albuquerque. Andres, are you there?
Yes, I am. Excuse me.
Oh, that's okay. Good morning. What's your question or comment for us this morning?
The comment I wanted to make this morning was just to commend the Bernalillo County Sheriff on just their community policing, everything that they're doing at this point in time. I've heard nothing but good things personally about Bernalillo County Sheriff's Department as opposed to the Albuquerque Police Department. And I just want to commend Captain Andrea Taylor on the hard work that she's doing. and I'm here at work right now, so I have to let you all go. But I just wanted to just lend my support to you all. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Andres. Stephen Robert Allen is the Director of Public Policy at the local chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
Steve, we've been talking about what rights people have when they call law enforcement. What are those rights, and what are some misconceptions out here about those rights?
Well, I think you want to make sure that you protect those rights when you interact with police. So I definitely understand Adrienne's point. You know, when we do the right thing in interacting with police, the results are different, right? We live in two different Americas in a way. I often have very positive interactions with the police department, but other communities are scared, and it's important that they take steps to try and protect their rights, even if those situations can sometimes still go awry, even if you do everything correctly. But, you know, if you're stopped by police, you want to stay calm. Obviously, don't argue, resist, obstruct the police. Keep your hands where police can see them. If you end up being under arrest, you want to immediately tell the officer that you wish to remain silent. You might think that you are, you might very well be innocent. That happens all the time. You might not have done anything wrong. But that doesn't mean that you should engage with the officer in any sort of substantial way. You want to immediately tell them that you want to remain silent and assert that right proactively in the beginning. You also want to tell them that, if they ask if they can search you or your belongings, you want to essentially always say that you do not consent to a search. You might believe, that you don't have anything to hide, and that's probably in many situations the case. But you want to assert that right as well. That's something you want to say. You don't want to fight about it when they do search you. That's very important because you want to protect yourself. You know, the goal in these situations is to make sure, especially if you are a person of color or in other situations, unfortunately, the reality that we're living with is that you want to do what you can to get out of that situation safely. That is the main thing that you want to think about. You also have a right to an attorney, and you don't want to engage in conversations really with the police about whatever incident you're involved in until you are able to consult that attorney, just for your own safety.
All right, Steve, there is so much that we could talk about. We have a lot of callers coming in, so I'm going to say thank you for today and follow up with you later. Sadiq Abdallah does community organizing with The Word, which celebrates the beauty and Black culture through the arts. He moved to Albuquerque a little over 2 years ago from North Carolina. Good morning, Sadiq.
Good morning.
You did an interesting thing here. You went to the Albuquerque Police Department's Citizens Police Academy. What was that like, and what did you notice?
Well, it was interesting. The one thing I noticed is that I'm from North Carolina, but the discrepancy of, as a Black person, the Black people and non-Black people on the force, I think that does make a difference because people who from different backgrounds don't always understand people from different places. And one of the things that I thought was the most important, I'm listening to the show, is I think that people sometimes miss the difference between individuals and systems. And the individual, people say, well, someone does this, someone does that. But we talk about a police officer, you're talking about someone that's part of an entire system. And when they bring police officers out, a lot of times I don't think that most police officers, and even the ones you talk to, the ones that they present out to the public, they're not the ones that are creating the bad seeds. The ones who are creating these types of situations that lead to these types of conversations are not the ones that we normally hear from. And I think that when most people go into any kind of organization, they go in, with the idea they want to make a difference, they want to do something positive, they want to do something correct. But I think that, most of the time they're dealing with, as a police officer, unfortunately, you're not a peace officer, you're a police officer. So you're dealing with policing. You're dealing with a lot of negative situations, a lot of negative people that affect you. And then you have a culture of people who've been there before that it warps you over time. So when they give us people to come out and say, we're doing the right things, trying to get people, a lot of them are. But that person becomes warped and corrupted. At that individual sense gets tainted and gets messed up in a quagmire of everything else that's going on with everybody else in the department, and that's going through. And I think that's what happens. The people that we speak to, the people that we know, the people that we see, you know, the good guys, so to speak, that come out, they are exactly who they are. But they don't represent the culture of the entire police department. And I think that even in class, as I saw, number one, about 40 people, I was the only black person there. I don't think I saw one African-American police officer or anyone of African descent. But I think that the people that we saw, they were all nice, they were all kind, they were courteous, they were cool. But we weren't in any kind of situation. It was a very peaceful, teaching kind of situation. So I think that was the biggest thing that I noticed from being there.
All right. Thank you so much for talking to us this morning, Sadiq. People experiencing homelessness are often subject to violent crime and other crimes at higher rates. Right here in Albuquerque, two homeless Navajo men were beaten to death by teens just a few years ago. And that's not the end of it. A quick Google search will point to a bunch of brutal stories like that out here, including recent ones. Jenny Metzler is the executive director of Albuquerque Healthcare for the Homeless. Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning, Marisa.
This extreme violence seems like such a pervasive issue. Are homeless folks willing to call the police for help, Jenny?
We have regular communication with the people that we serve and the people we do outreach with, and people who've experienced homelessness who are on our board of directors. We work with Steve and the ACLU do a great job of doing Know Your Rights Forum type conversations with people here. And we hear stories all the time about how it barely crosses people's minds. I think it's important to understand, I know that you're short on time, that homelessness is an experience. People who experience it are not solely but disproportionately people of color, not solely but disproportionately LGBTQ, not solely but disproportionately people who are without a home. And by definition, they live in public space. And often just the most basic of human behaviors are criminalized, have been made illegal in communities across our country. So these so-called quality of life ordinances or others that criminalize poverty and things like going to the bathroom, when you don't have a private space or resources and you're trying to be inconspicuous and off the radar so that you don't get harassed or victimized, really puts homeless people in dire situations. It sometimes leads to death. And so if you're trespassing, you're trying to find a place to sleep. Vagrancy and loitering could be waiting at a bus stop because of the routes and hours and connections are really limited. It's the only way you can get to a shelter or get some basic groceries to eat. When it's just public defecation and urination or public intoxication, things the rest of us who have homes can do behind closed doors privately with some dignity, people can be arrested for.
Mm-hmm.
And so often, you know, when you're trying to survive and you're doing something that is illegal in that respect, urban camping, you're not likely to call the police and draw attention to that. I think also listening to people, it depends on the individual and their experience and their previous contact with law enforcement, which I would reiterate is not dependent on any particular officer. They can be more or less callous, better or less trained. It's really a systemic and legal issue. And so people...
Thank you so much, Jenny. I'm sorry. We're coming to the end of the hour today. I want to point people to our website where you can continue this conversation. That's KUNM.org. Thank you for joining us today on the KUNM Call-In Show. Adrienne Barboa from Strong Families New Mexico, Captain Andy Taylor from the Bernalillo County Sheriff's Department, Ann Del Bui from the New Mexico Asian Family Center, Stephen Robert Allen from the ACLU of New Mexico, Sadiq Abdallah of The Word, Jenny Metzler from Albuquerque Healthcare for the Homeless. If you missed any of our show, if you'd like to share it with friends, the audio will be posted to our website, KUNM.org, where you can also find links to these organizations. Next week on the show, we'll talk about the efforts to end the annual reenactment of Don Diego de Vargas' Reconquest of Santa Fe. It's part of the capital city's fiesta celebrations coming up next month. That's next Thursday morning at 8. Thanks to our engineer, Marino Spencer. Sarah Trujillo screened your calls. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Marisa DeMarco. This is KUNM.